Okay, good evening and welcome to the April meeting of the Value for Money Council Services Scrutiny Committee. We will make our way through the agenda in the regular fashion, starting with item one. To receive any apologies for absence.
We received apologies from Councillor Legg.
Thank you. We move to item two of the agenda, declarations of interest. Does anyone have any declarations of interest in relation to the items of the agenda? No. Nope. We move to item three of the agenda, public minutes of the meeting held on the 27th of February 2023. Has anyone spotted anything amiss in that set of draft minutes? In that case, I propose that they are accurate. Could I get a seconder for that? Thank you, Councillor Gaskin. All in favour? Against? And abstentions? One abstention there. Thank you. We move to item four of the agenda, urgent business. Have we received any urgent business?
There are no urgent business, Chairman.
Thank you. We move to item five of the agenda, the civil enforcement review, the major remaining scrutiny review we currently have underway on this committee. At this point, I'd like to thank Mike and Margaret for coming this evening to talk to us a little bit more about civil enforcement. But Mike, I think you're going first.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I haven't prepared a presentation. I know that you've had a series of documents from Sean and James as well. So I'm happy to take any questions on those particular documents or questions regarding the service.
That was a short presentation, Mike. That might have been a bit shorter than I was expecting. Margaret, is there anything you'd like to add before we get going with questions? Okay. In that case, I will open it to the floor for questions to Mike and Margaret. Councillor Hadley.
Have you got... I can't see in the documents I've looked through. Do you have statistics to say, like, how many reported claims there are to the amount of... to the amount of actual charges in a percentage terms?
In relation to what, Councillor Hadley?
In relation to fly tipping.
Yeah, we can interrogate the system, the dynamic system, to look at the number of fly tipping incidents that we've got, and then use that data to hotspot the locations, which traditionally are Anglesey and our Shobnal wards, where we do have the majority of fly tipping that does occur. Is that what you want
yes,
to look
yes,
at?
Yes, yes. Just like a potential. Could you? Is it possible to get that break that down to the ward level?
Yes, we can break that down to ward level, absolutely, yeah. As part of the bulletin that we regularly do for members, you'll see that you've got that example of the report that's provided, so that can actually also be broken down into ward level to fly tipping, so if you're particularly interested in your ward or neighbouring wards, we could certainly do that. Cool.
Thank you. Maybe I could ask a question. So in relation to dog fouling, do we have any evidence that the emplacement of dog poo bag dispensers is actually reducing the amount of dog fouling that we're encountering as a council or not?
It's really difficult to say at this moment in time. No evidence as of yet. Still continuing to monitor the situation. So that provision of dog bags will be something that we'll need to look at going forward to see if that is actually making a difference in terms of reducing it. There's so many other factors to consider with dog fouling, particularly the fact that the team are able to issue fines, but that's predicated by the fact that we need as much intelligence and information as we possibly can to identify offenders. So we ask members of the public with... When they complain about dog fouling, have you got a description of the owner? And importantly, have you got a description of the dog? But are there any times when you've been around that you've seen that dog fouling or that person with that dog that you suspect? So we can narrow that down. The approach to reducing dog fouling needs that intelligence-led response.
Okay, so if that's one initiative we've run in terms of poo bag dispenser, which I appreciate is ongoing. What about the more traditional means of dissuading poo, such as spray painting campaigns and sticking up posters and that kind of thing? Does that have more of an impact in your mind?
It demonstrates that we as a council are actually out and about taking action against the people that the dog fouling. Well, their dogs that are fouling, not the dogs, not the people. It's very difficult to have any tangible evidence base to say all those different messages that we've sent out, whether that is making a difference. People will still let their dog foul. There'll be very, very responsible dog owners that would be mortified if they knew that they let their dog foul. Equally, are there some dog owners that are irresponsible. But we have other methods, such as public space protection order, where dogs can be on leads. Rather than just be able to roam free, you'll see that dogs are excluded from play areas, so you're not allowed to take a dog at any time into the play area. So there's different tools and techniques that we can use to make sure we have responsible dog ownership, but it's very difficult to say there's one particular thing that will reduce the amount of dog fouling.
I wouldn't want to be one to put words into your mouth, but is it the case that we need to be seen to do something? It's not necessarily that you need more resource to do it.
I wouldn't go so far as say we need to be seen to be doing something, but we need to. Part of that spray painting of dog poo is about letting the offender know that we've seen it and then we're trying to do something about it. It's sending a message not to the public that have necessarily complained, but to the offender that we're trying to find out who you are. And that's where the other contextual things come in, when we're talking about trying to get evidence from people, other campaigns, making people aware of contact numbers so they know who to contact if they do have an issue with dog fouling. So it's that kind of wider package.
Councillor Gaskin, then McGarry, then Hadley.
The dog bins, how often are they emptied, or is it just on a ad hoc basis when you think they're full? Because I'd one or two complaints about them smelling quite badly if they're left, especially during the summer. And the bags that are placed in them, I know there was a bit of a problem during COVID when everyone kept emptying them, but are they going back to normal? Because every time I walk by one, I never see a bag in them at the moment. It may be coincidental, I don't walk by them all the time. Just a bit of information on that, please, Mike.
Yeah, slightly different out from the arena of civil enforcement. So the dog bins are emptied once a week on open spaces. Any off open spaces, that falls under the remit of waste management, so I wouldn't be able to answer that part of the question. I assume it would be of a similar frequency. The dog bags themselves should be replenished every week, and when ID Verde, who are contractors for open spaces, do the litter picking as well. So it's part of all that, the process for that.
Okay, and I'm going to anticipate my own answer here, but would they ever be cleaned, those? Because, you know, I mean, they could get quite messy, and as I say, the smell is a problem from them if you live nearby.
We can absolutely arrange for them to be cleaned if that is the case. But they're not cleaned per se as part of the contract. They're just emptied by the contractor.
Thank you.
Councillor McGarry.
Thank you, Chair. There's never a poo bag in ours. I'm not going to lie, there's never a poo bag available. So it's interesting that there are poo bags available. I'm wondering if we need to start charging for them, because there's never one about when you want one. I'm going to go on civil enforcement and body cam issues, if I may. I know that obviously the civil enforcement team do their rounds especially in Uttoxeter, and myself and Councillor Sylvester have been out with them a few times now over the term, just to sort of highlight hotspots, etc. And I know that the body cam cameras, if I've actually been, I wouldn't say they're not fit for purpose, but I think they're a little bit dated. I don't know if that's been updated or is going to be updated, or if you've got obviously, if you confront somebody, you've got that straight away, somebody's back's gone up, and the last thing you want is any aggression. So to have that up-to-date equipment on our civil enforcement team, I think, is paramount. And my second question relates to initiatives. During my two terms that I've done so far, I've only ever seen one initiative by the civil enforcement team, which was a great initiative, I have to say. There was a stall laid out on a market day in the middle of Uttoxeter, and you were giving away all sorts of poo bags, for example, you know, and sort of enforcing the education around fly tipping and dog fouling, etc. And I just wondered if you've got anything planned in the next term to obviously bring that back into force.
Yeah, the initiatives continue across the year. It's always been a corporate target for the community and civil enforcement team. We're pretty much happy to go anywhere where there's a hotspot issue, so that can be factored in if you've got a particular idea in mind for Uttoxeter, so we can look at that. In terms of the body-worn cameras, I'm not aware that they're antiquated. They're actually is the equivalent of what the police use as well, so we've got some of the better cameras. I'd be interested to have a discussion with you outside of the meeting what you've learned from the officers to say that they are antiquated, because that's not my understanding of the equipment that we've purchased from the provider.
I do know when we went round the last time, they did say that was new equipment that was coming up, but they hadn't seen anything at that stage. So that was obviously last year. So
right. I couldn't answer that in any detail. I do know that the equipment that they've got is the latest model, so I'm surprised that they think it's antiquated. It might feel antiquated, but that's what the provider's latest model is. But if we can speak outside of it, that'd be great. Yeah, thanks, Sue.
Councillor Hadley.
Thank you, and following on from what Councillor McGarry was saying regarding like, engagement, you see a lot of the inner wards of Burton have quite diverse communities with ethical and minority backgrounds, which are not the first language is not English. And apart from the leaflets and sessions you've done a few times on these enforcement days, have you had any other types of engagement with the ethical minority communities?
The initiatives that the team do engage with all the different communities, whether that's face-to-face. We don't always have leaflets that translate into the different languages within Burton and East Staffordshire. We're looking on, I think it was 38 different languages were spoken in East Staffordshire. So to try and narrow that down into two or three or even four or five that we select, it's quite difficult. But we have done that. We have attempted to do that as a way to engage with different communities. Eastern European language, Gujarati, Bangladeshi, all those kind of the main core ones of those 30 years, but it's not always as successful. I think one of the better things we've done is the community stalls, going out to talking to members of the public, or perhaps using some community links that the teams have already got.
May I ask, you've provided some data on prosecutions in 2022 for the three areas that we prosecute on. What's your feeling in terms of the effectiveness of prosecution? Are we seeing repeat offenders, or does that generally put them off if they've been dragged to court?
Prosecutions or fines that are issued?
Prosecutions. Right. I can believe the fines would have an impact.
I like that. Barbara, I'm not.
I believe we've had some prosecutions with regard to littering. It tends to be on the back of a fixed penalty notice, though not being paid. We do have repeat offenders through fixed penalty notices that have been issued by the police for the public space protection orders for alcohol. Again, neither paid, so they're going out. There's 11 now we've got waiting for a court date for non-payment of those FPNs. The enforcement team tend to take majority of the prosecutions because they will do the interviewing of the, if we get any evidence in fly tipping particularly. So they will do the interviewing and then look to prosecute. It depends really what we feel best. We have to complete a form to see what's in the best interest of the authority, whether to prosecute or issue a fine. So if it was a huge fly tip that we got evidence for, then you're probably looking more toward prosecution. But if it was something slightly smaller, £400 fine is usually puts people off doing those sorts of things. Again, £400 is still quite a lot of money for the average person who's left a couple of bags out that they shouldn't have done. So those are the types of things that the enforcement team would get involved in, is when we get the evidence. But we certainly will prosecute if there's evidence to suggest.
You mentioned fine levels, and I think one of the things the committee were interested in from a value for money perspective is to see the revenue from fines versus the cost of resource to do civil enforcement. Mm-hmm. So really just a reminder that I think that data would be very useful to the committee going forward.
Yeah, I also think there's an element of cost that you can't really factor into that. This is time as well. So when we've just been talking about dog fouling, it's not easy to catch a dog fouler. And irrespective of what the fine level is, the effort and time that officers have to go through to try and narrow the window down for when that individual is letting their dog foul is very time consuming, and there's no time cost to add to that. So when you're talking about fines and costs, I'd say also factor in the time element that each individual case that we're dealing with needs to have that attention so we can find the offenders, whether it is dog fouling or flighting them or littering.
I completely agree. I think it's a case of looking at it as an aggregation of the resource in terms of the personnel that we've got looking into the area, rather than trying to break it down at a fine level, which, as you say, will be very difficult. Councillor McGarry.
Thanks, Chair. I think civil enforcement is a very reactive team. You know, it's literally we've got some fly tipping, we need to go out to it. But in terms of that, are we utilising, just for the purpose of the recording and everybody present, are we utilising the CCTV and the mobile CCTV when we can see a specific area is getting more and more? I mean, you know, just looking at the January's newsletter, you can see that obviously Shovnell was hit with quite excessive fly tipping. In fact, it was pretty bad overall, the borough, to be fair. And I just wondered if we were utilising those systems as well.
Yes, we hotspot for the mobile CCTV, so where we can, if there's a particular problem in a particular area, then we can use that intelligence to put a mobile camera up. Sometimes it's quite difficult to place a mobile camera. Obviously it can be seen if there's no trees, or, you know, we need foliage, which is going to start growing again shortly, hopefully. So it will cover that a little bit more, but yeah, most certainly we do hot spotting. We've got a lady in the team that pulls all the information together, so we can deploy a camera to that particular location. But on top of that, the teams are going out over the next couple of months to look at fly tipping and try to issue some fixed penalty notices for fly tipping. And then on the back of that, the enforcement team will look at all the shops to make sure they've got their duty of care in place for containment and disposal of waste. So that's where they'll join up.
Please do.
I don't know if this is part of the civil enforcement's remit, but on social media, and I say that quite loosely because I don't tend to look at it that much, but there is a big scope around dogs off leads. And obviously dogs off leads and people not paying attention to what the dog's doing is causing obviously more dog fouling. And I just wondered if the civil enforcement... I've seen obviously new signs that have gone up and they are asking you to keep dogs on lead where preferable, but I'm just wondering if that's something that we should be enforcing, especially in our main parks.
That the enforcement of dogs on leads is done by the civil enforcement team. The actual public space protection order that creates the legislation, so to speak, to allow them to enforce is where the Margaret's team come in. So where we've got dogs on leads or there isn't a public space protection order in place, that's where it's different legislation for what the civil enforcement team can do. So I'm trying to think of the park off the top of my head to use an example. If a particular park has a dogs on lead public space protection order, our community and civil enforcement officers can issue a FPN for that. If it hasn't, there's nothing that they can do because that person is letting their dog run around. But if that person is letting their dog run around and it's causing disturbance, they will naturally go up to them and say, please can you control your dog? But there's nothing more beyond that that they can do, so they can have a word with them. Just have a degree of having responsible dog owners. Again, I'm afraid.
Councillor Hadley.
Going on from Councillor McGarry again. The example of Eaton Community Park, on the sign it says dogs should be on leads, but that, at this point in time, that's just a suggestion rather than a public social protection order. Is that right?
I can't speak to Eaton Pops without going and looking at the record, but if the signage says dogs should be on lead, that you would expect it to have the public space protection order that says dogs should be on lead. If there's an anomaly there, we need to get that reviewed and get it sorted if that is the case.
If I may move away from dogs momentarily, interested in terms of fly tipping. Do we have KPIs in place for the clearance of fly tipping incidents?
Yes, we have a 3-day turnaround for the initial report to come in and somebody to go out to have a look and begin that initial investigation. So if we've got any intelligence of a name or address, we do a DPA request so we can try and find out where the person lives, etc. So we do all of that. And then waste management, they tape it as well. We've got yellow tape and stickers. So we've highlighted it. You know we're looking at it. And then waste management, it's usually within 5 working days of it being, it should be cleared then. It depends sometimes if there's certain elements that we want to retain there so that people can see we're looking at it, you shouldn't fly tip, etc. If it's safe and suitable, we will leave it just slightly longer, but there are main KPIs.
Hopping about again, I'm going to go to parking now. In terms of parking civil enforcement, have the council looked at alternative approaches to the enforcement of parking? For example, ANPR cameras rather than people wandering around with ticket machines?
Short answer is yes. The long answer is a lot more complicated. ANPR is... legally, we are legally restricted on the use of ANPR on car parks, and that's for local authorities. Whereas private sector organisations can use ANPR for their own free will wherever they want to enforce, we can't, and we're quite restricted on that. Going back a few years, we've looked at ANPR for central area car park and barrier systems. What they tend to do is have a lot of infrastructure capital costs, so keeping up with technology, with cameras. Barriers also need somebody to man that barrier. So even though you see a barrier on a car park that is down, you always need that 24-hour response, because if that barrier breaks, specifically if it's got a single entrance and exit, your barrier is either up or your barrier is either down, so there's a loss of income. So it is something that we've looked at previously. One of the other things we've considered as well, we're in central areas where I was originally going with that comment, is the backing up of traffic from the central area car park onto Union Street. When we've spoken to County Council, they've been very opposed to having barriers to our car park because it will back traffic up onto Union Street in central areas. So there's highway concerns that we have to think about as well. So whereas the human civil enforcement has, as anything, can have human error and be prone to the foibles of humans, there is a lot of infrastructure, technological costs that constantly need upgrading for other types of enforcement, such as ANPR, and then there's also the legal restrictions that are imposed on us as a local authority.
That was a long answer, you were right. Could I actually ask how to interpret the patrol cluster rota you sent around? It's like a multicoloured spreadsheet from hell. I presume the two-letter acronyms are people. Am I right so far?
Correct.
Right, okay. You've got six. Oh, God. You've got six, seven. No, you've got seven different cluster areas, but two of them are called number six.
Yeah, so they're for the band. So I'll break it down. So you've got your different cluster areas. The officers that those you write those different names all have their initials, and they've all got a colour which gives it its wonderful rainbow effect. So it's kind of a rotating 6-week rotor, broken down into those clusters. So as you can see, you've got cluster 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and a repeat 6 as well. There, at the bottom there is our most rural wards. At the top, you've got the urban wards, Anglesey, Burton, and Branston, etc. And then it gives that officer, the officers know where they're going each week. And the reason that's done that way is so that the workload is shared. Because if we had an officer that was in Anglesey, for example, that officer would be probably getting more fines for littering, getting more fines for fly tipping than an officer that might be in Tutbury or the Tutbury area. So it's to make sure that that's shared and they get around the entire extent of East Staffordshire rather than having them restricted to one particular location.
So our officers are very much multitaskers. They handle dog fouling, littering, fly tipping and car parking.
And bins on street as well. So there's other bits of work that the officers do as well. They're very much the eyes and ears of East Staffs as the borough council, and they'll pick up all the bits of work as well for services that require that kind of front-facing element. So even though you've very much focused on the enforcement side, there's other roles, smaller roles, that also take up the time, like bins on street and checking those kind of things.
So bearing in mind that rotor, and you may not be able to give an answer to this, but perhaps it's something that could be asked. In terms of parking enforcement, you need to be seen sufficiently to put people off parking without buying a ticket. The question is whether we've got that balance right in your mind as the manager responsible, or do we have a shortfall there? Are they not seen handing out fines sufficiently to put people off? Are we getting a lot of people parking when they shouldn't and they're not actually being caught, do you think?
Yeah, it's probably worth going back in time and looking at the context of why community and civil enforcement came into existence as a service. So once upon a time, we did the on-street parking for the county council. So we had a situation where our officers were walking around in the borough, but they could issue a fine for littering, for dog fouling, on-street and off-street parking. Now the on-street parking element is delivered by the county council themselves. So we don't necessarily have that situation where they're walking past cars that are legally parked and then be able to issue a ticket. What you've got is more a service that's got two distinct elements. There's the civil enforcement side, which most people would call parking, and there's the community side. That actually, they do sit well together, but they also, you could look at it and say, separate them out completely. So parking itself could be a kind of single service where we would have a dedicated cohort of officers that could enforce against car parks and have a community aspect, so that those pressing issues that our communities know that need to be addressed, like your littering, like your fly tipping and your dog fouling, those officers can deal with that as well. So I think it's difficult for me to say, have we got the balance right? Because I think that depends on the number of officers that we've got. You will probably need more and more officers for parking. With the rates that we've got of littering and fly tipping, we probably need more officers there as well. So getting the balance right can be really difficult, particularly when we've got pressures around resources, when we have a spate of fly tipping, we know where our hotspots are with fly tipping and those other things. So getting that balance is really difficult.
Yes, well, I wasn't expecting you to be able to say yes or no, so that was a good answer, thank you. Councillor Beach, then Councillor McGarry.
Thank you very much. I was wondering if you could go one step further on your graph. I love a good graph. I've just lost my screen, I apologise. In terms of this graph, I'm seeing weeks going down, but there's 7 slots. Is that over 7 days or 6 days, perhaps? 7 areas. 7 areas. Is that over 6 days? Like a rolling rotor.
Right.
Do they have allocated days a week? What I'm getting at, based on what you've just said, I'd be inclined to agree car parking could be a standalone whereby every day is covered for a period of time, because looking at that as a job for a day, if your day is even 12 hours long, that is an awful lot of ground and an awful lot of stuff to do and find and deal with. And I assume these officers have an admin role of their own caseload as well. At some point they've got to make some annotations and record some information and deal with their data. I'd be inclined to agree, and I'm just wondering how that does pan out for them in a day on the job.
Yeah. In terms of the first question, Laura, it's not 7 days. It depends on what days they're rotated in. So some of the officers here are part-time officers. So it could be 2 days, it could be 3 days, or it could be four. It could actually be 6 days as well. So it really depends what rota they're on for that week in terms of where they are at that particular time. Sorry, what was the other point, Laura? It's completely gone out of my head.
So what I'm kind of asking is, do we have cover on every car park 7 days a week?
No.
Should we?
That's probably a question for yourselves, really. Should we be having that? Because you could probably go onto a car park and find somebody that's chanting their arm day in, day out. That's the reality of operating any car park in anywhere in the country.
My thought process was, if you could resource it to have a bolus of staff, of people, at any given time, whenever you fancied, and you'd be there all day on every car park for 1 day or 1 week or 1 month, way more than you would normally, that would be a deterrent, because I would put money on people have worked out who's where and when, and that they'll get into a thing of, oh, I've got a ticket on a Monday, I'll go on a Tuesday. And whether if we've got a pattern, do we change our pattern so it's random, so that we have the opportunity to make it cover as much of the time as we've got?
Yeah, there's always going to be somebody that's tasked with car parks. Where they go on those car parks is entirely up to them. So the randomness of is what we've got doesn't necessarily mean that officer will have an officer on that car park every day, because it could be one that takes more of their time than another one, for example.
Councillor McGarry.
Thanks, Chair. Just looking at this cluster rotor, it doesn't look like you've been able to put in there any holidays and sickness. I mean, I've got at the bottom of the notes in terms of cover, but I just dread if Arthur doesn't, you know, go off at one time, you're going to be really stuck with this rotor. So have you got a contingency plan? I mean, I can see you've got SS cover OK and then cover DS while absent, but who's covering DS while absent? So I just wondered if you had a contingency plan in this cluster rotor as well. And looking at the cluster areas, you can see that Van 2, although it's Uchopster Heath, including car parks, but then you're over Crown and Baggots, and it's a massive area to cover for one van as well. That worries me slightly, because you are missing tricks all over the borough, and that's not just for Van 2. I'm just looking at the areas in general. It just looks like we've got a massive amount of area for each van. And then my question regarding car parking... Sorry to jump on your bandwagon there. Obviously, we give a slight dispensation to a couple of car parks on Uchopster in terms of the Leisure Centre car park when picnic school parents are there in the morning and in the afternoon. And I know that whilst I used to take my child to school there, many a time there's been a civil enforcement officer that's been literally swamped by a load of women if he's tried to give a ticket. And I just wondered if that dispensation was going to continue, or do we just avoid that car park at that time of day? And also, I do understand, obviously, for the Uttoxeter main Maltings car park, obviously a lot of parents pick up their children from Thomas Elaine School. So again, we've got people going at 10 to 3, quarter to 3, trying to find a good space so that kids can just stop in the car and off they go. But I've never really seen civil enforcement. Actually, I tell a lie, I did see them once there. And they did go around and say, you're not supposed to be here till after 3 unless you're buying a ticket. But it seems that doesn't happen a lot. And I wondered if the dispensation was there for that car park at that time as well, purely for the schools.
Picknells have had the dispensation for a good number of years, and it's kind of, it's always been an informal arrangement. If we're so minded as councillors in Uttoxeter, that's something that we could rescind and begin to enforce again. It's probably within the gift of councillors to consider that and the potential fallout that would have with the school, particularly with the parents. It might lead to pushing parents off the car park onto the side roads, and I do know in Uttoxeter in the past we've had complaints about inconsiderate parents parking, which you get at a lot of schools, which is on street parking in the county. The rota is brittle because we have so low numbers of officers. So you can see there, SS is actually Saida, who's the supervisor, who funnily enough would have been with me today, but she's off sick. She would have covered those, and the supervisor, we've got a vacancy for the other supervisor as well. So the idea with the rota is that we've got these the officers, this is the team, and we would parachute in the supervisor to cover as and when, because they're uniformed up and they can go out and cover. But we have low numbers in terms of staffing to be able to get around, particularly when we have holidays and sickness.
Yeah, just looking at those areas, like you say, you're thin on the ground really, aren't you? So I just don't see how they're managing to cover those large areas, to be fair, with one vehicle. Just an observation.
One final question for myself, and I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask anyway. Are we using old-fashioned ICE vehicles for civil enforcement, getting them around?
Sorry,
internal combustion engine. I apologise. I've been reading too many news articles. have we gone electric?
Gone electric, yes.
We have gone
electric. As part of the, I'm sure you're all familiar with the waste management procurement with the fleet. They've updated the vans for civil enforcement as part of the wider fleet update. So, yes, all electric.
Fantastic.
Very recently.
Okay, Councillor Beach.
I didn't want to change the subject with different questions while we were on a subject. A while ago, we were mentioning the police have capacity to issue FPNs, sort of on our behalf for things that are us. Who does the back office admin for those? And then, if I may, do they give us any data in terms of, if they're doing them or we're doing them? Is there any correlation between what they're issuing versus what we're issuing? Is there an uplift at all?
The police only issue for the alcohol orders that we've got at the moment, although we have got some up at Canterbury Road for slightly different matters now. They've got a slightly different order. But we do the back office, and we have one lady to do that. She checks payment of the fixed penalty notice. And then once, if it's not been paid, then it gets passed to an enforcement officer to prepare a file, and then our legal take it from there. The police have no capacity to deal with the back office system, which is why.
Is it something we have capacity to do? Is it a burden? Is it a problem? Is it something we need to look at in terms of
potentially
we're having help and we are doing the admin on their behalf? Is it something that you need support with?
Potentially, yes. As I say, we've got an officer that does do, but she covers all of civil enforcement admin and all of enforcement admin. So so we get half, well, half and half-ish to do those two sides of things. Then plus we've gone with the FPNs now. And once the lady's off that does that side, an enforcement officer has to step in. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. There's no further questions. I'd like to thank you both for your input. I think once we've got the financial figures, we'll probably be in a position as a committee to move forwards into either some further interviews, data collection, or even some interim recommendations. So I think we've made a good start for the next group, whoever they are. Thank you. Right. We now move on to item 6 of the agenda, the performance report for quarter 3, and I turn to James.
Thanks, Jess. So this is the quarter 3 performance report looking at the Council's progress towards achieving its corporate plan priorities up to the end of December 22. So I'll just provide a very quick summary in the normal way of the headline figures and the key points. But as I hope you can see from the information in the report, the numbers suggest that overall the corporate performance continues to be generally very positive. But just to summarise them, each indicator has been ranked as red, amber or green in the normal way, depending on the progress of that indicator against its target. And the analysis that we've done shows that if we look at the 123 live targets, this equates to the council being at 95.93% green overall, 0% amber and just 4.07 red. So looking at the VFM corporate priority, which is of course the focus of this committee, the figures are at 92.68% green and 7.32% red, with just three indicators sitting within that red bracket. The tables that you can see on pages 5, 6 and 7 of the main report, they just show some further breakdown on the performance, both overall and within this particular priority. And those few targets that I've referred to that have been highlighted as red are detailed on pages 8 and 9, just to include some narrative around the context with each of those indicators and the situation with each of those, which I hope you find useful. But as always, Appendix 1 shows comprehensive data on all the indicators within this priority, with the benchmarking that we've been able to do, as well as that's also attached to Appendix 2. So that's a quick summary of the key points. As I mentioned at the outset, overall the numbers suggest that the Council continues to be in a very good position in terms of its corporate performance. And with that, I'll pass back to you, Chair.
Thank you. Do we have questions on the performance report for quarter 3? I have a question. I believe I've asked this question before. VFM 01, short-term sickness days, still off track. I'd like to know what the manager's strategy is for reducing this, because if there's no strategy, if there's nothing we can do, there's not much point in having it as a KPI, because all we do is repeatedly fail it. Any comment?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll certainly take that away to the relevant officers and come back. I think, as I mentioned last time, there's a number of things in place that all managers can use to manage sickness absence. There's a management of sickness absence policy, which is used on a daily basis in respect of these things. So, for example, there's the Bradford factor formula that is used to try and reduce short-term sickness absence. So there's also an analysis done on a monthly basis, which is presented to the to the corporate management team on the sickness levels and where they are arising, so what categories of sickness they are, which departments that's falling within, for them to be able to look at that and use that insight as is necessary. In terms of I should also say as well, in the regular briefings there are a number of issues communicated around workplace health. So you'll see signs in a lot of the public areas, for example, think about this issue on a workplace health type of thing. The support available to officers as well as managers to be able to manage these particular issues. So there's quite a lot in place to really contribute to this. In terms of a specific outcome off the back of these particular numbers, I'll get further detail.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect if we don't get a sort of an indication of how that can be brought back into line as a scrutiny committee, we could potentially do a small item to look into staff sickness, just to find out what the root causes are, really, because from the headline figure, we can't tell It could be stress, it could be COVID, it could be any number of factors. Councillor McGarry?
The thing about it is as well, it could be any one of those factors. However, I think we've already discussed sickness and in terms of other people then having to draw off, you know, like your supervisors having to cover, and then they're obviously doing extra hours and they're trying to do two jobs instead of one, and that's ultimately then going to make that person go off. So you've got this knock-on effect all the time. I don't necessarily think you're going to pin it down on stress or you know, sort of an illness related. So you've got that as an added one.
I completely agree with you there, Councillor McGarry, and I think if it indicates across the board we've got relatively low staffing levels and that's one of the factors, then that's something for us to actively consider. Definitely. Does anyone have any further questions on the performance report, Councillor Hadley?
Thank you, Chair. Benchmarking, is it usual to only have like the three and we only have like the one to compare the results against? Because we perform, we're first in three of them, that's great, but second in one, but how do we go forward from that?
Yeah, it's interesting that you raise that. I mean, this is something that we've been, you know, scratching our heads over for quite a number of years, to be honest. I think, you know, in days gone by, certainly when national indicators were in place, so performance indicators were essentially standardised to a degree across local authorities, very, very easy to benchmark. As time's gone by and those national indicators aren't in place, then the benchmarking has been a bit more informal, if you like. So, you know, we're no different to any other local authority that we will tailor those national indicators to be beneficial to us or in terms of what we're looking at. So, you know, the context is different in a local authority. So we might want to focus on one particular area. So we might want to focus on short-term sickness absence, for example, just using that as an example, because looking back to the previous conversation, whereas the national indicator might be short-term and long-term, because that's our interest. We're looking at that particular item. So as things have become less standard, people aren't monitoring things in the same way. There's no obligation for other local authorities to contribute to this. So we've worked hard for a couple of things we've done is write to leaders of other local authorities to encourage them to participate in this particular exercise, because as at time we thought this was beneficial for this report and for these types of forums. We'd also merged with another benchmarking club, so there was another one very similar to this. So we took ownership of that, by speaking to them to keep the membership levels up, and then over time it's still starting to dwindle. So I think this is likely to be the last time you'll see this particular type of benchmarking in the quarterly performance report for exactly these issues. We've wanted to keep it going because even if one or two people contribute, there's still that network there. There's still that ability to talk to another authority and say, why are you doing something better than we are, if that is the case, to have that discussion and get that insight. So it's been useful. I think from here on in, what we'll be looking to do is identify other sources of comparative data. So the local government association, for example, have a tool that can be used. We'll be looking at that. There's sometimes a little bit of a lag in the data coming through that, so it might be that quarters aren't necessarily fully aligned as they are now, but there's things we can do as an alternative to this, so I think that's probably where this will go moving forward.
Thank you. Councillor Beek.
Sorry, I'm on the same track. I might have missed it. It might be in the paperwork. How do we justify the target that we've set ourselves? Is it based on a national KPI? Is it based on a national average in terms of absence days? Is there a reason our number of aim 4 days is this? And then I suppose my next question is, I see a pattern, quarter three being higher than quarter two being higher than quarter one. Is winter, autumn, summer. Generally, do you see that and sort of every year? Excuse me, I feel like I've not been around enough to notice for myself, but is that generally a pattern?
We'd have to look back at the historic data to try and really understand that, but it's something that is doable and it's something that we do, as I've said earlier on. There's a report that's presented, or data that is presented to the corporate management team. It's a rolling three-year basis, so we can certainly see those facts. Whether that is a trend, it's likely to be there. We do it on a monthly basis, so we can pick up those trends. you'd perhaps expect the winter months with more, you know, colds and flu, perhaps as an impact. In terms of the target being set, all the targets are considered, all different factors. So, for example, we'll look at a previous year's outturn. You know, if it's you know, high in one particular year, not talking about sickness necessarily, but any target, if it's high in a given year, you know, you want to stretch yourself towards the next year. So it's likely to be slightly better, to push you to be slightly better than the previous year, but it will take into account other factors as well. So there's always a discussion held around these kinds of forums as we move towards the corporate plan being set with these specific numbers being agreed.
I know in terms of the waste contract previously, we've had, I call them bank staff, locum staff, temporary staff. Do their sick days, are they factored in? Are they accounted for in terms of staff numbers overall? Because surely the more staff you've got, the more sickness days you would need to allocate on a percentage basis, if you follow my train of thought. Are they
fractional employees?
Thank you. Are the temporary staff and the locum staff included in the calculations or not, and would that affect it if they were?
In terms of the numbers presented in this performance report, it's full-time staff. It's permanent staff. It's not agency staff, for example. Individual departments will manage their own areas. So you've talked about waste management there. They do use a number of agency staff to cover sickness absence for one thing, as well as, you know, seasonal variations in workloads, etc. as well. But in terms of these figures, no, it isn't agency staff. It's just permanent staff.
Councillor McGarry. I was going to take your place then.
Thanks, Chair. Looking at the corporate plan performance, I'm looking at VFM 14 about the statement of accounts. Are we fining the value for not getting information back to us, or do we give them a deadline? Because obviously we're way off key on here, and if we're one of, like, what, 78% of people that are not getting their statement in, it's surely there's something wrong there. I just wondered if we did give them deadlines, or are we fining these valuers for not bringing the evidence forward on time?
I'll ask those questions for you and get a response to the committee.
Okay. I think that's all our questions on the performance report. We will move to item 7 of the agenda, the scrutiny review programme. However, the statement I made in the previous meeting, I suspect, still stands true, that we have civil enforcement underway. It doesn't really make sense for us to commence any new reviews. We can, by all means, add to a sort of to-do list for the next committee areas we think might be important. If there are any that you wish to be considered by the committee going forwards, say now. Otherwise, we'll leave it to them to decide what's on their slate. Councillor Beach. Yeah.
Putting on a list, you know, if you're not, if you're not, but it might be quite something worth doing. And as part of our ongoing one, any recommendations relating to capacity in terms of following up resourcing a given area or re-resourcing, our recommendations from that, whether to anything comes from it as a follow-up point.
Indeed. And I agree in terms of the sickness. I think we won't launch a formal review, but I think if James can make a note to mention it to whoever the next chair is, that is something that's been repeatedly noticed. Any other items? No. In that case, we will move to item 8 of the agenda, the public executive decision records. Anything in the EDR, public EDRs, that anyone wants to raise? No. In that case, item 9, questions. Have we received any questions? I don't believe we have. No. In that case, item 10, date of the next meeting to be advised. More formal than to be decided? I'm never sure. Okay. In that case, the chairman will therefore move that in accordance with Section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, that is likely, in view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there would be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraphs of Part I of Schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets before each item number on the agenda. Could I get a seconder for that? Thank you, Councillor Beach. All in favour of moving into private? Thank you very much. Councillor Gaskin was thinking about that. I'll wait for the room to clear. Do you need to... Yep.